I'm joined with Bernard Mulvaney, People Before Profit candidate for the next local election in the Clontarf local electorate area, to speak about disability rights, action on dart lifts, climate and biodiversity emergency, and also his local election campaign. Good morning, Bernard, and thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
Yes, very well. How are you keeping?
Not too bad at all. I was just laughing at the song you were playing there, "Don't You Want Me, Baby." Is that something I'll be thinking of Saturday morning, is it?
I think all the election candidates will be thinking about that, yeah. But hopefully you'll get good news. Bernard, first of all, tell us about the experiences our disabled community faces today in terms of inequality and discrimination.
Well, our disabled community is a portion of our society which is constantly overlooked. I'm the father of a little girl with a disability, so I'm fully aware of what the challenges that they face. They continually seem to be excluded from a lot of the conversations that we as a society are having. Like the important issues that are ongoing, they're always constantly left out, and it seems to be an afterthought that people come back to them and ask them for a view on whatever policies that they're pushing, and only then it's because that the people have stood up and said, you know, this has affected us in a very diverse way, a very unfair way, and they've never come to people like, I'm a full-time carer, and like they never actually come and ask you, what do you think on this particular issue, or what do you think, or how would this affect you? It always seems to be the able-bodied community making a lot of the big decisions for those with disabilities, and that really now has to change. It's a very unequal part of our society when we are now striving for such great equality.
Yes, absolutely. And you've been campaigning over the last 4 years, calling on our government to take action on this, haven't you?
I have. This is initially how I got involved in the politics side of things. A young man from Dunleary, who has the same disability as my daughter, he was just fed up. He couldn't go anywhere. He was a young man heading into his 20s, and he wanted to have the same opportunities that his friends had. So such a thing as like getting the dart. He didn't do near. He wanted to go into town. Having to give 6 hours notice to be able to get a dart. Then when he got on the dart, getting to a train station, and the lifts were out of order, but only been told this when he disembarked. So he'd have to wait, get back on the dart, and travel to the next station, get off there, cross over, try and get back somewhere near the station he initially wanted to get off. These are issues that were constantly facing this young man, work issues and all that. So he got in contact with me and asked me would I support him. He wanted to see the ratification of the UN Convention for People with Disabilities, which we were the last country to do, and then we didn't do it right. So I said, absolutely, my daughter, I'd think of her, and I stood by this man, and we began a campaign of just lobbying at the gates of the Dáil. Slowly but surely, it gained momentum and ground, and eventually led to the ratification. But unfortunately, they left out one of the most important pieces of that legislation, and the people, the disabled community, felt very, very disrespected on that particular part of it. And like that again, it's just the complete disregard for the people making decisions for the disabled community, but not including the disabled community in those decision-making processes. They seem to be at the end of the queue for what's needed, which I sort of had enough of that. I don't think that's right. We wouldn't allow any other portion of our society. We wouldn't show them that in fairness. We wouldn't allow ourselves to make decisions on their behalf without actually engaging with them. So that's why I got involved, and as I did get involved, it was funny because the only politician that would ever come out and engage with us was Richard Boyd Barrett. And through that, like, I got to know the party, and it progressed from there. I got more involved with it. And again, as I said, Richard was the only one. Even Saturdays and Sundays, he'd come in and meet with us if we were holding a protest, and offering people an opportunity to voice their feelings on the fact that as a disabled community, they felt neglected.
Is there sufficient wheelchair access on our transport systems, like, for example, buses, coaches, trains, dart services? Is there any room for improvement there?
Oh, there's huge room for improvement, Johnny. There's huge room. Just coming off that, there was a campaign recently by a woman in the west of Ireland, Vicky Phelan, who was she's a mother of kids who had who's now in a wheelchair, and she lives in the west of Ireland, and she wanted to access third level education, but the bus service that she had to use to get to college, they had no lift access, so she couldn't actually use her wheelchair to get on the bus. She highlighted this. The journal picked it up. One of our European candidates, he came in on it, and she had to push very hard just to get a proper service on a route that she could be able to access third level education. But it took her so long to get that. With the darts, I've been campaigning for a long time now in relation to the lifts. The lifts are, like every morning I get texts from people that use the DART on lifts that are out of order. And I mean, even just taking like Clontarf last December, from the 3rd of December to the 15th of December, there's no lifts working in Clontarf station. Like, and if anyone knows Clontarf, you can't access the platform unless you use a lift.
That's right, that, Jess.
For that period of time, nobody with a disability, a young mother with a pram, or elderly people with just mobility issues could not use our DART. That, and the fact it's coupled with, you have to give, they've done us a favour, they told us, they've reduced it down to 4 hours. So you have to ring up 4 hours beforehand if you want to access the DART to tell the station that you're going to be coming in your wheelchair, whatever mobility device you have, and someone will be there to use a ramp. I mean, that's unheard of. Nobody else in society would allow that. I mean, if you said that to any other individual, because of whatever about them, that they have to give 4 hours notice to access public transport, there'd be absolute outcry. So it's sort of, and they always use the adage, like it's sort of a monetary thing. We're trying our best, and we're trying to improve services and improve our lifts. But it really boils down to one thing. It's the slow erosion of these public services into private contracts. So you have, like, the lifts now are maintained by a private company. And, I mean, there's an amazing story from Clontarf there. Not too long ago, someone was trapped in the lift. They rang the company that maintains the lifts to come out for freedom. They said they were busy. They couldn't do it. So they had to ring the fire brigade. The fire brigade came and cut the person out. And that, again, goes back to that, where before we would have had a public entity that would, part of the rail service, that would maintain these lifts, would look after them, would also police them, because a certain amount of antisocial behaviour causes the lifts to break down. Again, like that, there's no guards on the platforms anymore. It leaves people feeling vulnerable, especially if you're a wheelchair user. The last thing you want to be is on a train station platform on your own late at night. And so we're just excluding the disability community from all these conversations. They're never included, only towards the end of the decision-making process. And usually by then, the decisions are made. So I've decided I've enough of that, and I want to try and get involved and offer these people a voice and give them a platform that they can express their views and not to be excluded anymore.
Right, so it's vandalism that's causing the problem, is the main...
It wouldn't be vandalism now, the main thing. Like, I would say with Clontarf now, there was an issue with a part, and seemingly they couldn't source this part for 2 weeks. And but when I pushed it even more, it turned out the part was coming from somewhere, and there was a cost issue. And again, it boils down to the fact that there's no service maintenance element to the it's privatized. So, you know, you're not going to carry this equipment with you all the time. You're not going to have it on hand if that ever goes wrong. So whereas before you'd have workshops, you'd have individuals who were trained in maintaining these things, they'd be on a constant roster of maintenance and checking things were right, and if there was an issue, they would be replaced fairly efficiently. So, that's what happens. There is a certain element of vandalism to it, but again, that boils down to the fact that there's no lift guards anymore. There's no platform guards to rid that of the antisocial behaviour. You've got a certain amount of it there, of course. I'm not going to say it's not, but there is. But again, it's about the creep and privatisation of all these services.
Okay, just to change the subject, what's your view on climate and biodiversity emergency? Do you feel our government is failing to act on this?
Well, we have a bill currently. Bree Smith is pushing it, the fossil fuel, keep it in the ground. And she's working across the parties. It seems to be we've a funny state of affairs where our government likes to talk about climate change, but at the same time they want to open the Shannon Estuary to the liquid gas from America. So in one sense they're saying yes, we need to have a big conversation about climate change. We need to discuss how we're going to reverse carbon emissions, while at the same time offering up one of our most precious resources to gas, and to offering it to fracked gas companies to come in and store their liquid gas in on our Shannon. So it sort of seems again now that that money is trumping, for want of a better word, is trumping the actual climate change issues that are there. They want to also impose carbon tax on people, which again takes it away from the actual real polluters, the big companies that are investing so much money in oil-based products. And they seem to be, like in the States, they are lobbying heavily for a reversal on any tax incentives on them, and pushing it back on the ordinary working individual, who in some instances, especially if you're looking at the in our society, people who are impoverished and who haven't access to the funds to be able to make their home more environmentally friendly, they have no choice but to heat their homes with fossil fuels. And we're looking at now a tax that's going to come in and hit them again. So it's not really a progressive stance, I feel, especially in a society where we have such a great divide now, and so many people are suffering. We're just going to heap this on top of them again, which is unfair.
Would you agree that Ireland is way down the list in terms of climate change?
Oh, it is. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We're failing, like in that meeting our targets and all that. Again, it boils down to our reliance on fossil fuels. We are predominantly a fossil fuel country. I mean, and even looking at that again, like the Bord na Mona, like. They knew for a long time what was coming down the road, but yes, they waited until the last minute, and then they said, we're going to do such a thing, we're going to stop peat production, a couple of hundred jobs gone, with no vision for a future. I mean, you could have looked at that years ago and decided, right, we need to start implementing more environmentally friendly alternatives, wind farms, solar energy. We have a group of individuals here that have worked in energy production. So let's start transitioning into more environmentally friendly products. But for some reason, our government didn't do that. They waited until the last minute. They just said, well, we're closing down that production. And we keep dropping the ball on these things. We always seem to just wait till the last minute. And then it's the working man and woman and family that has to suffer. And it's sort of not good enough anymore. You know, we need to be more on this. We need to be, and like the top end, I mean, in the States, the top end of the oil fields and petrol, chemical, all that kind of production that's causing the most emissions. I mean, they're lobbying hard to be exempt from any fines down the road, and for any to be held accountable for the devastation they're causing to the planet.
What's your view on providing free public transport with a view to reducing carbon emissions?
Well, we'd be very much in favour of free public transport. And I mean, at a minimum, a very reduced rate. But again, we're looking at a public transport network that is down on what it was in 2009. We had 1,200 buses. We're still at... We reduced that down to 914 during the recession. We're down to we're back up again to 1,016, which is still under where we were in 2007. So we want people to leave their cars at home, and we want people to use more public transport. At the same time, we want to privatise our public transport network, like with Bus Connects, and we're not investing in new means of renewable energy type transport network systems. I mean, our DART and all that is still, it's very underfunded. It's they've reduced the carriages down from 8 to 6. And if you're down at the train station any morning and talking to commuters, it's overcrowded. Again, it's not incentivizing people to use it. And the same with Dublin Bus. I was talking with people up in Dunnacarney last week, and they're having an issue with the bus service. It's overcrowded, so they can't actually access it. When the bus gets to their stop, it just keeps going. So people say, we just don't bother. We just go and get the car. They want to use their bikes, but I mean, a lot of the time too, the cycle infrastructure isn't great. They're competing with so many cars now on the road. They feel vulnerable. So we're really letting people down on that. We're saying you have to leave the car at home, but we're not offering them a solution as to what would replace it. The Lewis was a start, but we need more of that, and we need it to be accessible, and we need it to be cost efficient. You can't be heaping more costs on people that are already struggling. So they are.
Right, I understand. So how has your local election campaign been going? What kind of reaction have you been getting?
I've been very surprised. It's been a very positive campaign. In the area, it's been good. There has been a positive response from people. The war changed a bit, so there's some new areas been brought into it, old areas that are gone. Knocking on the doors, again, the main issue that people want to discuss is housing. It's a huge problem. I just can't believe the amount of houses that our doors have knocked on. I've been talking to the people like grannies and granddads whose children have come home, and these are people that are working in good jobs, and jobs that you would have always said were safe, secure. I mean, teachers, nurses, guards, and they've actually moved home because they're trying to save money for a deposit. They maybe moved home with young kids, and they're doing that because they can't afford rent and to save a deposit. And they feel really let down and really isolated. And then other families are talking to, the rents are skyrocketing. It's just unbelievable what people are paying in rent. I mean, £3 what people would be paying in a mortgage, and they don't see any way out. And what they do see is whatever housing has been built is sold off in one lump to some form of investment fund for high rent. And again, that doesn't offer people security in their life or going forward if they wanted to start a family or if they are a family. So we're sort of destroying our communities. I mean, one thing I would have prided ourselves on in this country would be we would always have had a great sense of community, and we seem to be allowing that to erode, to disappear. And I live in Marino. I mean, one of the first in 1930 that was built by the state for the people. And how or why we've moved away from that, I obviously it's all to do with money, and we're putting money ahead of people, which is wrong. I mean, we need to move back. We have to stop selling public land. We need to start building houses for people, for everyone, for people who can't afford houses, for people who would like a chance at a first house, and for families who are starting out. They want community, good schools. You know, I mean, I don't think it's a whole lot to ask, really. And people sometimes hit me up with, and you want to give them free houses. I mean, there's no such thing as a free house. Like, I mean, there never was. I mean, if the state provides it, the state owns it. But you're providing homes for people, especially children. The fact that 4,000 children are living in hotel rooms, I don't know about you, that is horrendous in my book. I'm a father of two. And to think there's a child... and that's what they're going, that's their home, a hotel room. I mean, that was never happening in Ireland. Now it is. I think that's a testament to how bad things have been run this last 10 years. It's just, that's horrendous. Our children are supposed to be, that's our benchmark. If we can't look after them, we're doing a poor job. We really are now.
Yeah, well, housing is number one coming from locals right across the board.
Oh, yeah.
And
we can't sell off these. We can't sell off public lands anymore. We have to start building on them.
Yeah.
I mean, this is ridiculous. Like, you know what I mean? Selling off public lands to developers and then buying back apartments and buying them back for multiples of what we sold the land for. That, I mean, really, is that the Ireland we want? I mean, that's a very bizarre state of affairs that we would sell off our land and then have to buy it back at nearly as much, if not more, than what we sold it for. I mean, that doesn't ring very true to me.
Not
we
making
need to start
sense.
Building again.
Yeah.
We need to start building again. And it's and everyone's agreement with this, actually. It's really, really out there. People are saying, yeah, and we need mixed developments. We need people from all walks of life. We just don't build enclaves of elite or poor or disabled or whatever.
All three and four bedrooms, yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But yeah. Bernard, I'm sorry, time is catching up with us and we have to leave that.
No,
I'm afraid, I'm sorry. So thanks again for joining us today and good luck with your election result. All the very best to you.
Thanks very much.
No, you're most welcome. Take
care
and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Johnny. I'll talk to you again. All
cheers.
Right, thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now, that was Bernard Mulvaney, People Before Profit candidate for the next local election, talking about a number of issues and also his local election campaign.